This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
I'm sick with this, I'm sick with this. Since you went to the bottom, I just missed. My own sweet time didn't change what I felt. I didn't recognize simple things anymore. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated. I don't want to be defeated, I don't want to be defeated.
Hey Shane, this is Brendan from New Braunfels. So this headline is for Blothar Michael Bishop. I changed my name too. He's the lead singer of the band Gwar, which you'll recognize from the famous song, Gwar, huh, good God, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. Michael made the hard decision to leave the University of Virginia to rejoin the band. I tried to do a little research on UVA, but they didn't have a website, which makes sense because UVA can't put together three W's. Now that Michael left, everyone's drinks on campus are warm because he was the only one who knew the recipe for ice. UVA is the home of the Cavaliers, which is the first time in history someone from Cleveland can say they're doing better than anywhere else. Hey Shane, bull fucking shit you were wearing shorts at Warp. At the San Antonio date, it was over 100 degrees and you were literally wearing a black jacket and pants. Speaking of Warp, that's the only place that anyone ever involved in a Gwar show has been hot. According to Blothar, Gwar is like the mafia. You're never really out. Which is really confusing because according to his girlfriend, he's never really been in. Gwar can make fun of Trump all they want, but he doesn't even know they exist. Not just because they're not famous enough, but because they claim to have been created from the depletion of the ozone layer. Trump knows climate change doesn't exist, so how the fuck could Gwar? The people that handle the blood in Gwar are called AIDS, Shane. It makes it nice though, with all the extra people when they hit the road, they can hop on the HIV lane. It's crazy to me that Gwar literally created their own bar just so they could get people hammered enough to listen to Gwar. Apparently it opens up after all the other bars close down because you'd have to be hammered to decide to go there in the first place. And Shane, you can't ask for fucking costume ideas on the day of Halloween. What the fuck? Do you guys have like a fucking boxing day for Halloween in your backwards ass country? Fuck you, dude.
Oh, a little hate line action. I told you I'd roll out a clip sooner or later. Welcome back to another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, episode 102. Can't believe it's been that many. It's so cool. And we have a great episode this week. I talked to a total rock star, Josh Todd. You know him from Buck Cherry. You might know him from his new solo side project, Josh Todd and the Conflict. Wonderful to have him. It's a great episode. Sit back, enjoy. I can't wait for you to hear this one. And of course, once you're finished listening to this, go back and listen because we got 101 other episodes, you know, just chilling back there. You click on them, you play them, you go boop, and they play. But hey, it's great to have you back. This podcast, as you know, I talk to other lead singers about what it's like to be the front man or the front woman of a band. And of course, if you want to get in touch with me, it's super easy. You can email me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Just search. We come right up. It's real easy to find me. And as I'm recording this, I am like freezing cold in the back of a tour bus. We are in Thunder Bay, Ontario. If you don't know where that is, it's just keep going north. Just drive north very, very far and then keep driving north even further and then a little further and then you'll get to Thunder Bay. And we're here on a day off on a pretty cool tour. Silverstein is headlining across Canada, dipping into the U.S., with a band called Seaway supporting us. It's really, really good times. So make sure if we're rolling through your town, you pick up tickets. And also, Silverstein, we're making an announcement this Wednesday. So, you know, keep your ear to the ground a little bit, whatever it is. Make sure you're following Silverstein on all the social media as well because we got a cool thing we're announcing. I want to thank everybody who listened to last week's episode with Blothar of Gwar. It was a really, really great episode. The feedback has been terrific. Of course, if you aren't happy, if you think I do a terrible job, feel free to call the hate line. As you know, I do roll out clips. So it's 1, that's if you're, you know, you need a country code because you're outside the United States or Canada, plus 1-657-666-HATE. Again, that's 657-666-HATE. Give me a call, leave me a message, and yeah, I love the hate, so give it to me and let it rip. Don't hold back. And of course, if you want to help out the show, the best way to do that is to check out and become a member of the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. For as little as $6 a month, it gets you in. You get bonus episodes. You get merchandise sent to your house every 3 months. You get interaction with me on the Facebook group. We also have a new Instagram page. I do a Q&A every month. I just did one yesterday. It was a lot of fun. I take your questions. Sometimes I play some tunes. And we really just do have a great community between me and all the other fans of the show. And trust me, you're going to make a lot of new friends. So check it out. The link is leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. Anyways, let's jump in to this week's episode and my conversation with Josh Todd of Buck Cherry.
Hey, y'all crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Stretch yourself down my back to keep me right on. Hey, y'all crazy bitch, but you fuck so good I'm on top of it. When I dream, I'm doing you all night. Stretch yourself down my back to keep me right on.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm good. Out here on the road, just started Josh Todd in a Conflict Year of the Tiger tour. It's going really good.
Nice, nice. Yeah, Year of the Tiger. The title, I was curious about the title. First of all, the track, the title track is like insane. It's so heavy. I didn't know what to expect. It's very, very heavy. You're pretty much screaming through the whole thing. How's that? How was that experience? Because that's got to be the heaviest thing you've done, at least in a very long time.
Not really, you know, like my roots are, you know, all my roots are like punk rock records and independent records. And, you know, I had a band in LA called Slam Hound for a long time prior to getting in Buck Cherry, you know, and I wrote this record called Resentments, and, it was a lot of fun, you know, it was a lot heavier than, you know, the stuff that I eventually got into, like more on the traditional rock, you know, format. But so I just wanted to get back there. I wanted to create something kind of, you know, different and away from Buck Cherry, so that I had two situations I could build over time.
Definitely. No, I think it's cool. And the what's the reference to the title of the record? Because I was like, okay, Year of the Tiger, he must be born in the Year of the Tiger or something. But no, you're a Year of the Dog.
No.
So what's the reference there?
Well, it was like, that was a song that really kicked off the record songwriting process. It was one of the first songs that Stevie and I wrote for the record, and we were just so fired up about that song. And, you know, I accumulate titles, you know, of wherever I'm at, when I'm reading books, when I'm on the road, whatever grabs me, I jot it down, and I have like a whole list of titles. And anyways, I got that music, and at the time, I was like really engulfed into the Hannibal series and Narcos and all these shows, you know. And I don't know if you've seen the Hannibal series, but there's one despicable character in there that has a bunch of pigs, and he feeds people to his pigs, you know. And
I thought,
that is such a disturbing way to go if you're going to go, you know. And I'm pretty fascinated with the animal kingdom. So, anyways, it's pretty literal, Year of the Tiger, you know, like I created this character in that song that, you know, had kind of burned every bridge and was running. And, you know, eventually he gets caught and is fed to tigers.
Okay, I get it. No, it's cool. And it's cool that you're doing this thing, this solo thing, taking a bit of time from Buck Cherry. What's going on now with Buck Cherry? Obviously, Stevie's in the band too, but... Is this something you're going to do for a while, kind of like an album cycle, and then go back?
Buck Cherry is the best place it's been in 3 years. It's a band again, and it's great. I mean, we did a lot of touring last year, and we've been doing a lot of touring with Buck Cherry, and it was time to give it a rest. You know, we've also done a lot of shows this year with Buck Cherry. We started doing shows back in February. So,
cool.
You know, it's not like we haven't done shows. We've done a bunch of shows with the new lineup, and we got a show coming up on December 16th in Temecula. We're doing, you know, shows here and there around the Tiger tour. But, I'll get back to that. Once I'm done with this, I really want to pay attention to it and build it up. And then eventually I'll go make a Buck Cherry record and do that.
Do you find like, you know, my band is relatively successful, definitely not on the, you know, multi-platinum level like Buck Cherry. But when I started doing solo stuff and doing some of my own side projects, it kind of threw me off a little bit because you kind of have certain expectations that you got used to, you know, over the years, whether it's how you're traveling, you know, just the sheer amount of people coming to the shows. Is that hard with a new project just to kind of like suck it up a little bit and be like, okay, this is a new thing. This is still at its grassroots. People don't know every song yet. Is that difficult?
It's really difficult. And that's a really great point. You got to really kind of abandon all your old thinking, you know, and it's super challenging in that regard. But like, I don't know why you do this, but the reason I do this is because it really was my outlet. It was my escape. It was my everything. So that's why I got into music. I didn't get into music for like the traditional way some guys get into rock bands, you know, like for pussy and fame and all that. I did, you know, that's not why I got into this. I got into this because I really enjoyed writing stories, you know. Like, I started writing lyrics like the very first day I rehearsed with the band in a garage. So, you know, like, that was like the turning point for me, and that's when I was like, this is amazing, and I want to dedicate my life to this, and that was the turning point. So, like, creating this was just a total labor of love. I love building something from the ground up, and yes, it is humbling at times, but, you know, that's kind of where the magic lies, you know, is like kind of understanding, like there's a lot of stuff that I didn't understand about the new way of building a rock band.
Of course.
In this new day and
sure,
age.
It's all different.
It's
now.
Like, it's so different, you know, and Buck Cherry has the foundation and we can go out there and do our thing and it's there, you know, thank God, you know, but, like the new way of doing things has really taught me a lot, and it's given me a whole new bag of tricks that I will bring into the Buck Cherry fold at some point as well.
I know, it's amazing too. Just even with something as simple as record sales, like, you know, these days you put out a record and it sells a certain amount and you're like, is this good? You know, like, this is a good first week.
You gotta completely forget about it.
you have to. And now
there
you have to.
There is no such thing now as record sales. It's like, it's bullshit. It's all nonsense. You know?
I know. And it's just so crazy.
Even if you have like a top five song on active rock radio, it doesn't really mean much. You have to really, you know, we live in an ADD society now. Like, everybody is infiltrated with information like 24/7. They're literally looking at stuff. They're looking at over 100 things an hour, you know?
Is that a statistic? I didn't know that. That's wild.
Yeah, that is a statistic. I mean, they're looking at over 100 things an hour from their friends on YouTube, sure, on a link here, something there, somebody shot them this here. They're literally checking their Instagram maybe, I don't know what the last time I checked, but it was like every 40 seconds or every like couple minutes. You know, that's what we're dealing with. You know what I mean? And so it's hard to have people go, hey, are you focused on my record coming out? Are you going to come to my show? do you even fucking know about it? You know what I mean?
No, totally. And especially like with my band doing so many music videos, I feel like we do a music video and then it's like, it's just gone. You put it out and it's up and it's there for a week. And then it's like, does anyone watch it anymore? Which brings me, you know, I wanted to ask you about your video for your song Rain. Because that's a great video, and probably a video that, I mean, I see the Narcos a little bit now that you mention it. But, you know, that's the kind of video that at least it tells a story and it's something. It's not just, you know, there's nothing wrong with a bunch of guys in a white room, but, you know, I feel like you have to make content that's going to, you know, stand up and hold up a little longer.
Yeah, it's really weird. You don't know what people are going to react to, and so whenever that's the case, you got to really do what's true to your, you know, your art and what you want to create, you know, and usually it translates, you know, people can see the passion and what's going on, you know, and that video like was really, really cool. It was really great to work with Billy Jane again. We'd done a bunch of videos together and it kind of turned into To Live or Die in LA, like that type of vibe, you know. It started in a way different place, you know. I wanted more of a Tarantino type scene in a fucking like Western saloon and everybody dies at the end, but we didn't have the budget for that. So that's when we got to that.
No, it's a great video. People should check it out. And yeah, it's really cool. I mean, you made the record with Eric Kretz, who's, you know, most known for playing drums in Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah.
Was it different for you making a record kind of, you know, with you sort of at the helm along with him, rather than the Buck Cherry, you know, major label machine, probably looking for a single, looking for, hey, we got to make this kind of record? Was it a lot different that you could kind of do, you know, for lack of a better phrase, whatever the fuck you wanted?
Actually, it's completely different. This is the first time we've been on a major label in a while. You know, like Buck Cherry wasn't on a major label. You know,
Okay.
this is considered a major label record. And going in, you know, Stevie D co-produced it with Eric Kretz, and Ryan Williams engineered it, and he did all those Brendan O'Brien records. So,
You
know, the mentality I have with making a record is to be really prepared prior to getting into the studio. So we were well rehearsed. We had all the songs, all the arrangements. There was no bullshit going in. There was no like, oh, what are we going to put here? We don't have anything for this section or anything like that. It was just go in and record it. We recorded that whole record in 11 days.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, I think I heard somewhere a long time ago that your 15 record, Buck Cherry record, was recorded in only 15 days.
15 days, that's correct.
You know, so I guess if that's something that you've done in the past. For me personally, I'm like the worst. I'm like writing lyrics the night before, like I have to sing a song on the last day of tracking. So I can't relate to that, but that's good for you that you have that ability, you know, to be like, all right, we're going to put a date on this and we're going to get it done and record it. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Well, I don't like to waste time and money, you know, like
sure.
I would rather spend all the time like writing and rewriting and writing and rewriting and doing all that, you know, in a dirty rehearsal room, and then just go in there and fucking, you know, capture the moment, you know, capture the live true essence of the band, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, I want to go back to some of the early days and talk a little bit about some of the stuff that happened with Buck Cherry, because it's a very interesting story, and I don't think you get a chance to, you know, do a long format and talk about it. But I know you're from, you know, Orange County, California, and you have a bit of a punk rock kind of background. Talk to me about that and what it was like growing up, you know, I guess in the 1980s, you know, in the Los Angeles suburbs. How was that for you?
I mean, it was a big movement at the time when I was a youth, you know, but there was music all around me. Like my my mother used to clean the house and listen to like Rod Stewart and Willie Nelson and Kenny Rogers and like the Eagles and those type of records. And my sister, my older sister was, she was into all the Prince era bands, you know, like Prince, Apollonia 6, Vanity. What is it, Vanity 6 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I have that wrong. But anyways, Sheila E., The Time, all those records, Yaz, and I started listening to all the, I sneak in her room and listen to her records, you know, but
yeah.
I was also pretty angry inside, you know, and there was just a lot of dysfunction going on in my life, you know, so I really gravitated towards punk rock music. I really liked the honesty of the records, you know. These were bands that weren't making records for major labels. They had no rules. They
yeah.
said what they wanted to say, and it was a very honest interpretation of what was going on inside of them, you know? And so those were the records that really spoke to me, and I really loved that.
Absolutely. And your family structure was, did you have, like, do you live with your mom and your sister? Was your dad not in your life? Was that, you know, part of the anger, or what really stemmed from that?
There was a lot of stuff, you know, my mom was married a few times. My father committed suicide when I was 10,
oh,
you know, so, you know, there was just a lot of stuff going on. I became like this kind of like, my mom worked full time. And so, we had a lot of trust in our house, you know, as far as like, my sister and I were kind of on our own a lot, you know, in the house. So I became kind of a bit of a wild animal, you know, for a lot of my youth, you know, so I would just seek things out and find ways to fulfill my, you know, crazy universe that was going on.
So when was it that you got enamored with music, you know, so much, whether it was punk rock or whatever it was, that you're like, okay, I got to start a band. I got to start, you know, making my own music. When did that happen?
It was weird. You know, I wanted to be a professional surfer for a long time. So I surfed every day for, you know, a long time. And
you still
then,
surf?
I don't surf as much. I got kind of into go-kart racing, and I have kids, and I have a lot of stuff that occupies my time. So I was really kind of obsessed with surfing at the time, and then one of my surfing buddies was a drummer, you know, and he knew I had to this day, I don't understand how they wanted me to sing, because I wasn't really a singer, you know, and and so I don't know if I was 15. I think I was around 15. They had a band. It was the only band in school, actually. And they were like, "Why don't you come down? We need a singer." And so I was like, "All right." So I went down there and I plugged a microphone into a guitar amp. I just remember my voice was like all distorted and I was just screaming, you know.
But that makes it sound so much better when you do that, right? Because then no one can actually hear if you're in key or not. And you're probably not.
Yeah, I was horrible, and they were only playing covers, and I was like, "Hey," something inside of me just said, "Hey, you guys want to let's write an original song?" Like I was like, and I just started like kind of running the show, and I said. I asked the guitar player, I go, "Do you have any original like guitar riffs?" And he played one, and I just got down on the ground and started writing lyrics, and we wrote a song that day, you know, and that was like, that was it. That was when surfing went on the back burner, and I was like, this is all I want to do.
No, that's amazing. And like, I don't know my time frames here, but like, I assume this was like the mid 80s, something like that.
Yes, it was.
And that's like when all the hair metal stuff was going on. I mean, punk rock was going on too, but you're right there in California, like where all that's happening. Was that that must have been something you couldn't avoid, you know, being influenced by?
I wasn't really influenced by it, honestly. You know, like,
but what about the decadence of it, the rock and roll, you know, that whole thing, the Motley Crue?
I gotta be totally honest with you. When I saw bands like Winger and White Lion and like Slaughter and shit like that on MTV, I just thought it was so lame. I really did. As a kid, I just thought it was ridiculous. You know, I didn't listen to a major label record till I was like 17, and all the first like real rock records I got into was like AC/DC, Metallica, and Led Zeppelin. You know, that was like what I like started listening to, and then cut to like there was all this like cock rock coming out, and I didn't understand it. You know, I thought it was contrived and lame and. And then until GNR came out. Then GNR came out, and I saw Axl. I only gravitated towards like singers that I thought like I could that were cool, but that chicks wanted to fuck too, you know? Like and like all those like cock rocky dudes were like they just seemed like such fucking jagoffs to me. But like when I saw like Ian Asbury from The Cult and I saw like Axl Rose, I was like, these dudes are fucking badass. They had edge. And they were also like really, really great, really powerful frontmen, you know. So when GNR came out, I just remember seeing a Sweet Child of Mine video, and I kind of like I didn't really get the Welcome to the Jungle video, and because his hair was all like teased up, and I thought it was lame. And then when I saw the Sweet Child of Mine video, I was like, this is fucking dope. This dude is badass, you know. So. That's when I kind of started getting into more of, you know, traditional rock type stuff. But AC/DC was definitely the foundation for me as far as that is concerned.
That's definitely. And like, you know, Buck Cherry is known as a bit of a hard partying band. At least that's your image. You know, it's funny now because you're a family man. You know, you got a couple kids and a wife and all that. But I imagine those early days when you guys were forming were pretty crazy.
All my partying days were before Buck Cherry. People get this thing that Buck Cherry was this party band. Cause we have songs like Lit Up and Crazy Bitch, but there's like so many other songs that aren't about partying, you know, in the Buck Cherry catalog. So, you know, it's funny that we get labeled about that, but you know, like Lit Up, I wrote, literally, I just came in the room and Keith was, the whole band was playing and Keith had that riff and I just started singing, and I just sang about the first time I did cocaine. That was it, you know? And it was like, I've been sober 23 years in November. So,
congratulations.
Like, yeah. So it's not what everybody thinks. We were just, we hosted the party. We had a lot of fun.
That's funny you bring up Crazy Bitch. I remember, I bought my mom an iPod, like back, you know, when they were kind of like the new thing, you know, whenever it was probably like you know, she wanted an iPod. So I bought it for her, and I was showing her how to put, you know, some music on it and whatever. And I'd already put like some of her favorites, which was like, you know, Led Zeppelin and Jimi Hendrix and stuff like that. And I asked her if there's anything she wanted, and she goes, oh, there's this song I keep hearing on the radio. I just like it so much. It's the crazy bitch song. And I always, whenever I hear about your band, you know, whatever it comes up, I always think of that story. And I was like, okay, Mom, let's go. We'll buy it on iTunes and we'll put it on your iPod. And we did.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I mean, apparently, like, I don't know if this is true about the crazy bitch video shoot where the director or whoever just invited a bunch of whoever women down to get naked and filmed it. What was that like for you? Especially being sober at the time.
Oh, it was fun, you know, like I'm not dead. I'm like, you know, it was a lot of fun. It brought out, you know, the true essence of the song, and it's funny, I never would have thought that song would have been taken on the life that it has taken on over the years. You know, it's just crazy. That song was like just laying around for 3 years before it got on a record. So, it's cool. I mean, I'm super grateful. That's what you work so hard for, is to have a hit song.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, you brought up, you know, honesty in records you liked, you know, growing up, and there's always been a sort of like, you know, a rock band's, like whether it's Led Zeppelin saying "I love the way you squeeze my lemon," or you know, or whatever you know, example you want to use, yeah, about a band really talking about sex, but they're masking it. You know, that song, you literally are just saying it. You know what I mean? Do you think that for people was like, oh shit, like he's just saying it? Like, do you think that was a big factor?
You know, I just think it was the right song at the right time. You know, like, all that nasty shit now is going on in hip hop. Like, the lyrics in hip hop music it's just crazy what they're saying. I fucking love it, you know? And, and there's, you know, I really, think rock has been in such a bad spot because it's just, I don't know, you know, like, I don't want to say that there's not great rock music out there, 'cause there is. So, but when I listen to like active rock radio, all the bands kind of are morphing into one band. They all kind of sound the same. Nobody's really kind of like, I don't really understand where they're coming from lyrically. It's not like a celebration anymore. It's not like fun. Nobody's talking about fucking anymore and partying. And it's like, you have to go to pop music and hip hop music for all that stuff now. And that's why I feel like rock is just, you know, it's kind of like depressing, you know, everything that they're speaking about in rock music now, you know? So, I hope that all changes, you know, I hope that it gets fun again and there's guitar heroes again and there's like really charismatic frontmen, you know?
Right. Well, you got a guitar hero in your band, that's for sure. You bring up the interesting thing about hip hop, and it's something that doesn't get talked about. Why do you think in hip hop, and hip hop is mainstream, let's be honest, like that music sells more than
totally
anything.
Totally mainstream.
It's mainstream, and they're saying, you know, raunchy shit.
There's guys now talking about their dicks like, you know, like they don't give their dicks for free. And I'm like, this is fucking rad, man. They've totally turned the tables on, like, you know, where it was like total girl power and, you know, the pussy is fucking, you know, sacred. And now they're just like, you want this dick, you got to fucking put out, you know? So, it's pretty funny. I really enjoy it.
But why is there such a difference between hip hop and rock like that? Like, you guys go out and you say that, you know, and people are all up in arms about it, I'm sure. And people are covering their children's ears which is maybe okay, let's be honest. But I don't know why it's so different. Do you have any speculation on why?
I mean, it's the forbidden fruit. It's like awesome. You know, you want to fucking, you know, when you're a kid coming up, you're in your little clique at school and everybody's, you know what, your hormones are fucking crazy and you're just doing all kinds of crazy shit. You're testing the waters. You're getting fucked up. You're going to parties. You're having a great time. You don't have many responsibilities, and that's the beauty of you know, adolescence, you know, and I just think that that's what all these rock bands got to start thinking about, like, man, write a record that's like something that you're going to remember, that's that summer a kid's going to remember, you know, like Back in Black was, you know, like,
yeah,
like fucking, you know, the Aerosmith records, like all that stuff, Led Zeppelin, you know, like that would be fantastic.
No, I couldn't have said it any better than that. And yeah, it's funny. That was a great, I mean, AC/DC was the obvious, like, you know, she told me to come, but I was already there. That's the, like, yep, epitome of the sex. Everyone knows what that means, but yeah.
Sexual innuendos everywhere.
Exactly.
And fucking,
exactly. Yeah. And it's great. You know, you talk about how you've been sober for 23 years, you're a family man, you've got kids, you know, and all this stuff, but I feel like you have this sort of outlaw, you know, a persona about you, and you're a hell of a nice guy. Where does that come from? Is that something that you try to, you know, keep up in terms of a reputation? Is that something you think is important to your fans, or do you not really care at all?
I have a hard, you know, I've always had a hard time in social situations. I don't really enjoy like big crowds of people and socializing, and it's just it's never been like something that was awesome for me. So a lot of people think I'm a dick, you know, and until they get to know me. And I kind of keep my circle of friends very, I can count them on one hand, you know? So, I don't do that on purpose. It's just the way I am. Like when I go out, I want like a task to do, like I'm good. Like if there's something to do, but if there's nothing to do, I really don't care for small talk and hanging out and all that kind of stuff. And that's when people think I'm a fucking big asshole. So, I don't know, you know, I like to work, you know, I like to create, and that's it. You know, when I'm not working, I like to just tend to my kids and my home life. And that's kind of me.
How old are your kids now?
I got one that's 23. I got one that's, 11, and I got one that's going to be, 8.
Wow. 23. I didn't know you had a 23 year old.
I do. Yeah.
Is that a boy or a girl?
Girl.
And is that like your everything? I mean, that must be so rad to have. I mean, she's watched
her
whole career.
I mean, she's a big reason why I got sober. I didn't want her to see me fucked up. I'm a really, really bad alcoholic and drug addict, you know? So like, when she was born, I had to break the chain, you know, and that was, she was a big part of that.
They always say that. Yeah. I don't have any kids, but they always say that it's like almost instantly when you have a child, something in you changes.
Listen, I love kids. Like they're so honest and amazing, and like they're incredible. So, you know, if you haven't had kids, you got to do it. You know, you got to do it.
I'm not getting any fucking younger. That's for sure, man. Dude, this is rad so far. I want to talk about the whole Buckcherry thing and how you guys basically had two pretty successful records. You know, one of which, you know, with Lit Up went gold. And then you guys went away for a while. It looked like you were going to start another band. It looked like you were going to be a member of Velvet Revolver for a second. Then all of a sudden, Buckcherry is back and bigger than ever. That is something to be proud of. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, you know, that was a weird time. It was a weird transition, and everything happens for a reason, you know, and I'm glad we had that shot, and everybody told us everything we couldn't do, and we just did it. Like there was nothing on paper that said Buckcherry was going to be successful at that time. No one would sign the 15 record. No one in the United States would sign that record. So our manager created his own label to put out the record, 11/7 Music. And that's how we got it out. And we got a little money from Japan. That's why we could only make the record in 15 days. We only had a little bit of money. And it was a collective thought. That's why it all happened, because we were all kind of at that. We were right there on the edge. You know, we knew this was it, you know, and we went for it, and it all worked out.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, and I guess after your second record, I don't know what happened with Buckcherry, but you know, exploring other things and like, I know you were playing with some of the guys from Guns N' Roses. What was that experience like? And is there any regret there, or almost the opposite, almost relief, you know, knowing now that it worked out, you know, with the comeback?
The GNR thing was like a month out of my life, and
Was it? Okay, it's always built up to be a bigger thing, you know. So
yeah, it was way before it was ever called Velvet Underground, you know, or Velvet Revolver.
I almost said Velvet Underground too.
Yeah, it all came about, you know, like Keith and I had got off the Time Bomb tour, which was a complete debacle, and you know, two of the guys had quit from Buck Cherry, and then we fired one guy and two guys quit, and then it was just Keith and I holding the fucking the fort down again, and we were just in there making demos for the third Buck Cherry record. We hadn't been dropped from our label or anything like that, and one of those songs was Crazy Bitch. So we were writing songs, and Slash called up Keith and said, hey, there's this Randy Castillo benefit at the Key Club. Do you guys want to do some songs with me, Matt, and Duff? And we said, yeah, sure. So we did a Sex Pistols song, some Buck Cherry songs. We did a couple of Aerosmith songs. Steven Tyler actually came up and sang too. And
cool.
And it was just a lot of fun, you know. We had a lot of fun. And then after, you know, cut to like a week later, I was talking to Keith, and I'm like, it felt really good to be like in a great rock band again. And so we thought we'd call them up, and they were thinking the same thing. And so we became a band for like a month, and that was it. We were like in writing songs and rehearsing, and then all of a sudden Slash abruptly just came in and pulled the plug on the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, I mean, you know, regardless, it paved the way for something very special. And, you know, I don't know if I have the numbers right, but I think that 15 record almost sold 2 million copies just in the US alone, not to mention the success everywhere else in the world. I mean, that is like, that's pretty crazy, because that was sort of right after the curve of when records weren't really selling anymore.
It's really crazy. It's really crazy because exactly what you're saying, and the fact that it was a rock record, you know what I mean? Like, rock was not doing great. It was declining massively.
No, and especially, like, you know, that kind of rock, you know what I mean? It was a bit of, in some ways, a kind of a throwback. You know, like, when I watched the videos and stuff, it was like, oh, this is, like, what rock and roll's all about again. You know what I mean? It's those influences. It isn't Kings of Leon or you know, like, whatever at the time was more,
right.
You know? So.
Yep.
I guess that's part of why the labels didn't want to sign you. And then talk to me about, did they come crawling back after this success? I mean, everyone must have wanted a piece of you.
Of course. Crazy Bitch popped and everybody wanted to be our friend, and Atlantic Records up, you know. We had an upstreaming clause with Atlantic Records because we were distributed through them.
Oh, really? Okay.
And of course, they wanted us with open arms. They were like, okay, we're ready for you, but they wouldn't sign us before that. So, you know, I have my stuff with major labels, you know, as far as like, I take it all with a grain of salt, you know. It's like, you got to just be careful about, you know, what you put into all that, you know what I mean? So the bottom line is, it all worked out. We became successful because we got upstreamed. We got to get Sorry out, which was, you know, up there as far as a great song for us, up there with Crazy Bitch. So
yeah,
it was good.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. And now with the new band, this, you know, the solo project and everything going on, the conflict, you're on tour with Hinder right now. When you're playing these shows, I mean, it must be different for you. You're you know, supporting, playing a shorter set. I assume you aren't playing any Buck Cherry material. Are people Buck Cherry fans coming out to see you? Like, what is your fan base like?
Yeah, this tour is a co-headlining tour, so we're each doing an hour, Hinder and I.
Wow.
Hinder and the Conflict. Like, it is what it is. We've done everything. I've done every situation you can think of in rock music as far as getting on stage and playing at whatever times and playing for 30 minutes or an hour and a half or a headliner or arena stage, club stage. It doesn't fucking matter to me, you know. I just go up there and give it everything I have, you know? So that's all that matters. And we have great songs on this record. This is so much fun to play live. So we're having a blast, and And we're getting the awareness out there so that everybody knows that this is a real thing, you know, because I think people are always tentative. They don't know, like, how serious you are about it. So we got to go out there and build a story. And like you said, it's one stage at a time right now.
Yeah, no, totally, totally. I mean, an hour is a long time. I mean, your record clocks into like 35 minutes. What are you doing to fill the time? You play Buck Cherry stuff at all, or covers? Or
we've converted like some of the, like Stevie and I did a Spray Gun War EP, and it all electronic stuff. We created, converted some of those songs into Conflict songs. They're really great. They're actually, some of them go off more than the Conflict stuff, and like OMG and Turn Out the Lights and Fury we're doing live. And then we have an unreleased track we're doing live called I Kill You, You Kill Me. It's fucking dope. And you know, we vamp out in some of the songs, like we do some solo sections in Erotic City. It's really cool. And so we fill up the time. We're actually we actually have been going over, you know, so we gotta tame it back a little bit.
Yeah, the co-headlining thing's always like, I mean, my band's done a bunch of those too, and it's never easy. You know what I mean? Like, someone's always like bent out of shape about something. You know, it's never easy. Hinder are pretty cool guys though.
Very nice people. Yeah.
There you go. Cool. And singing wise, I mean, you take the same approach like with the Conflict as you do with Buck Cherry vocally, because, you know, this is the Lead Singer Syndrome podcast. We do talk about singing sometimes. Is it the same thing? I mean, like I said, when we kicked this off, you're like pretty much full on screaming, which isn't something that you've done a whole lot of in Buck Cherry. Is it different for you vocally? Do you have to warm up differently or anything? Or
I'm not really screaming. I'm only screaming in the chorus of Year of the Tiger, and it's a controlled scream, you know, so I'm not really hitting my vocal cords really hard. I do is I do a lot of warm-ups. Singing, I have a lot of stuff that I do. I mean, a lot of it is what singers don't know is a lot of singers don't know about diet, you know, it affects your voice, you know. So I make sure I don't eat foods that give me acid reflux, which is like tomato-based foods and stuff like that. And I don't drink carbonated drinks. I don't drink anything that's cold. So lukewarm water, it's like the discipline that I have to do as far as my regimen is pretty gnarly. Like,
that's
so
crazy, yeah.
You know, I do all that. Of course, you know, you got to prepare your body for it, which is, you know, I work out every day to get my wind up. So a lot of cardio and all that. And then I go do it. You know, I always do warm-ups and I warm down.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, I've never heard specifically about tomato-based foods, but it's actually funny because I suffer from acid reflux pretty badly and I probably should eat. Do you eat spicy food too?
Yeah, you got to get rid of all that, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to do like a spicy food, do it in the middle of the day. Don't do it before you go to bed.
Right. No, that's what I had to go to the doctor because it was getting so bad for me, and they told me coffee, alcohol, spicy food, eating late at night, and smoking. And I was like, well, I don't smoke, but four out of five ain't great. So I actually stopped drinking coffee, and I haven't drank coffee in over a month now, and it's actually helped a lot.
Yeah, I can't stop coffee, but like
it was tough for me. The first 2 weeks were weird.
I drink a lot of water, and I don't eat like 3 hours, 4 hours before I go to bed. So, you know, and I do baking soda. Like, you just take a little baking soda, like a teaspoon of it, and put it in some water, and do it every couple hours. You know, like if you feel you have a lot of acid reflux that day.
Really?
And yeah, it's like a natural remedy for acid reflux.
That's totally crazy. You know, I've actually never heard of that. So
go get a baking soda box at the supermarket and look on the back.
Cool. That's great, man. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I know you're on tour and stuff, and you probably got all kinds of things going on. But I do want to ask you what's coming up next. With this tour, with everything else, whatever's going on in your life, and give me the rundown.
What's coming up is we're 6 weeks out here with Hinder and Waylon, and Adelaide Sway is coming on this tour as well here pretty soon. And we're writing this till like December 3rd. Then we're going home. Like I said, we got a one book cherry show at a racetrack in Temecula for a Robbie Gordon event. It's going to be awesome. December 16th, we're going to do that. And then we're going to break for the holidays. Then Conflict is back on tour February.
Sounds awesome, man. That sounds awesome. And the new record, people should check it out because it's great anyways, but it also has a Prince cover,
yes,
which is rad. Tell me about that really quick. What was the decision there for that song? Obviously, you know, in his memory.
Well, you know, we're huge Prince fans, and when, like, Prince passed away, it was, like, devastating for Stevie and I. You know, we're like, how can this happen? I mean, this is a guy I thought was going to really age gracefully and kind of have a very strong voice, you know, very late in his life. And
totally.
And it just blew me away. And I think, you know, a whole nation, and like, so everybody and their mothers was doing Prince songs live. And so it just wasn't the time at that point in time. We wanted to do something from like Nasty Prince, 'cause that's what the Prince we like. So,
yeah.
We took a swing at it. We didn't know, like, it's really hard to do a Prince song and make sure it's good, because it's got to be great, you know. And so, you know, the challenge was taking it and making it sound like a Conflict song, and I think we did a good job with
absolutely
it.
I think so too. Well, Josh, thanks a lot for your time, man, and everything, and have a great rest of the tour, and thanks again.
Awesome, man. Take care. Right, you too. Yep. See you.
All the best.
So there it is with Josh. Thank you so much to him for taking the time out of his tour schedule to do it. They're on tour with Hinder. You should hear me rip Lips of an Angel for some karaoke. Honey, why are you calling me? I can really put that voice on very well. So they're on tour now. Check it out. Also, check out Josh Todd and the Conflict, the record. It's actually really, really good. I will leave you with a tune of that for sure in just a minute. But before I go, please make sure you're subscribed to this thing. I don't want you missing some of the great episodes we have coming up. We have Dustin from Thrice, I think, next week. Maybe I'll wait a week, but you never know when it's going to come up and when it's going to pop up on the feed. So I don't want you missing some of the great episodes. So just hit the subscribe button. And of course, if you do like the show and you want to help us out, go to iTunes and write a review, preferably 5 stars. That is another way we can help this thing grow. And of course, if you're a super fan, you need more, because let's be honest, for some people, one episode a week is just not enough. Check out the Lead Singer Syndrome All Access Club. Again, the link, leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Here is a tune by Josh himself. This one's called Year of the Tiger. Here it is on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. We'll see you next week.
This is the year. This is the year of the tiger.